Experimentan los países del mundo, iniciada por banqueros norteamericanos hace poco más de 5 años, se ha traducido en una alta tasa de desempleo en el globo. Las fracturas en la economía europea es algo que preocupa a los gobiernos, los economistas y planificadores de las naciones, inclusive a la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, que hoy día tiene una grave advertencia. Emma Reverter reporta.
El desempleo en la eurozona podría alcanzar a 22 millones de personas en los próximos 4 años, a menos que las políticas actuales cambien de dirección en una forma concertada, advirtió la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, la OIT. En un informe sobre la crisis de empleo en esa región, la OIT estimó que 4,5 millones de personas podrían sumarse para 2016 a los 17,4 millones de desempleados que hay en la actualidad. Al presentar el estudio en Ginebra, el director general de esa agencia de la ONU, Juan Somavía, afirmó que si no surge un enfoque equilibrado en las políticas de empleo, todos los países de la eurozona, no solo los que se encuentran ahora bajo presión, sufrirán las consecuencias. Además, alertó Somavía, de no tomarse medidas integrales, la crisis del empleo desbordará las fronteras de la Unión Europea y podría amenazar la economía mundial. No solo hay soluciones meramente financieras a la crisis financiera, esa es la esencia de este estudio. Tiene que haber una solución productiva para todos los problemas productivos que ha creado la crisis financiera, enfatizó. El titular de la OIT subrayó la necesidad de aumentar la inversión en los sectores productivos para evitar que la crisis económica se agudice y fomentar la recuperación del empleo. Emma Reverter, Nueva York.
El presidente de Colombia, Juan Manuel Santos, arribó este miércoles a la región de Toribio, donde las comunidades indígenas protestan contra la inestabilidad creada por los choques entre las Fuerzas Armadas y los guerrilleros. Santos aseguró que buscará la salida a la situación.
Aquí han dicho que están cansados de la guerra, 48 años de guerra, y tienen toda la razón. No solamente ustedes, yo estoy cansado de la guerra, 46 millones de colombianos están cansados de la guerra, y por eso el gobierno está con toda la contundencia y decisión de acabar con esta guerra, por las buenas o por las malas.
Los indígenas intentaban crear un ambiente en que los actores armados pudieran dialogar y buscar soluciones a los problemas de Colombia sin hacer uso de la fuerza.
Que se maten entre ellos, pero que no involucren a la población civil.
Diferentes grupos armados ilegales que aparecen y lo mismo como al ejército, que se retire de nuestra zona.
Disparos y ráfagas del helicóptero. Y pues la gente se pone tensa en el sentido que parece que todavía el público, como dice el gobierno, no está controlado.
La periodista Angie Camacho está en Colombia.
Su presidente de la República acaba de salir, pero además donde se pregunta. Al final del discurso del presidente Juan Manuel Santos, se escuchaba a lo lejos las ráfagas de fusil. En ese sentido, ¿cómo se puede hablar de situación controlada por parte de las fuerzas militares cuando el propio mandatario, estando aquí en este punto, la situación, precisiones, pero sobre todo en ese marco de resistencia, eso no fue debatido? Ni siquiera se permitió la entrada a las comunidades para hablar con el presidente Juan Manuel Santos. Simplemente un consejo de ministros que vienen desde Bogotá a sesionar acá, donde la gente no tuvo la palabra, donde la gente no se pudo expresar. Cuando el presidente Juan Manuel Santos llegó aquí, la gente le pedía que se retirara, que se fuera, porque su presencia incluso hacía que la gente corriera más peligro acá todo el día, aviones patrullando en esa zona y duros enfrentamientos que se presentaban en las voces. Jesús, que lo que necesitaban que se resolviera no se resolvió. Entonces un poco la pregunta que queda es, ¿a qué vino el presidente Juan Manuel Santos a esta zona si ni siquiera tuvo un cara a cara con las comunidades? Simplemente al final una alocución, un discurso final donde se habla del tema de inversión social, donde se habla de algunos recursos, pero donde los problemas estructurales profundos que tiene esta comunidad no fueron ni siquiera escuchados. Cuando se tuvo conocimiento que el presidente no iba a reunirse con los ciudadanos, con los campesinos que estaban, salieron distintas comisiones conformadas por líderes y vendedores, amas de casa, era impresionante, comerciantes que empezaron a subir la montaña, han aprendido a vivir en medio del conflicto, a ellos ya ni siquiera los asustan las balas y las bombas que nosotros hemos escuchado acá. En ese sentido, esos diálogos regionales que se esperaban no han sido posible. Entonces será simplemente un diálogo con la insurgencia, continuarán tumbando las barricadas de la fuerza pública, y en esa medida ellos sientan su posición de resistencia, pero sobre todo de no inclusión en el marco del conflicto armado. Ellos habían ofrecido esta zona y era una propuesta para el presidente hoy, para que se llevara a cabo un diálogo humanitario con la guerrilla, con la insurgencia, que lo planteara el gobierno en las condiciones que quisiera, pero que las comunidades indígenas fueran las garantes y ofrecían su territorio, pero ni siquiera fueron escuchadas. En ese sentido, no se van, aquí continuarán trabajando, por supuesto reciben los recursos económicos que ha ofrecido el gobierno, no es la solución que ellos esperaban, y dando la palabra, como lo dicen, caminando las montañas, menos los enfrentamientos me involucran. Mire, en este momento se escuchan las ráfagas aquí en esta parte donde nosotros estamos, porque la situación no está controlada. La parte montañosa que circula toda esta parte, toda la mañana sobre vuelos, duros bombardeos, ráfagas de parte de los aviones militares que están enfrentando el combate. Por ende, esta es la situación, esta es la sensación de la gente que siente y que sintió que simplemente el departamento del Cauca fue una sede más para llevar a cabo un consejo de ministros. Pero aquí, de lo estructural, no pasó nada.
La solución no son las armas, sino una propuesta de paz, dijo uno de los voceros indígenas.
Y mis manos son mi amor y mi sustento, y mis manos son lo único que tengo, son mi amor y mi sustento.
En México, el senador Ricardo Monreal, coordinador nacional de campaña de Andrés Manuel López Obrador, dice que la coalición Movimiento Progresista promoverá la invalidez de la elección presidencial por violación a principios constitucionales plasmados en el artículo 41 de certeza, imparcialidad, equidad, objetividad y profesionalismo. Indicó que cuentan con elementos que hacen posible demostrar las irregularidades graves que se presentaron durante el proceso, entre ellas una demostración científica de cómo las encuestas fueron utilizadas como un método de propaganda y de inducción del voto. Además, mencionó la parcialidad con la que se condujo el proceso, la compra del voto, la triangulación de recursos ilegales, la doble contabilidad, el rebase del tope de campaña. El senador Monreal añade que se pueden cuantificar la intervención ilegal de gobernadores del PRI y también la omisión del Instituto Federal Electoral al negarse a realizar una sesión extraordinaria de su unidad de fiscalización para que resuelva sobre los casos Monex y Soriana. Por otro lado, el candidato del PRI, Enrique Peña Nieto, ha dicho que su gobierno tendrá como asesor de seguridad al colombiano general Óscar Naranjo, quien fuera parte de la administración del expresidente Álvaro Uribe. El periodista Carlos Facio ha escrito extensivamente sobre el general Naranjo.
El general Naranjo, en Colombia, al salir Uribe y toda la saga que hay en torno a Uribe, vinculado con narcotraficantes, en juicios en Estados Unidos, la ruptura entre Uribe y Santos, eso deja descobijado al superpolicía Naranjo, que tiene una cola muy larga que le pisen desde los años, comienzos de los años 90, cuando justamente como oficial de la Policía Nacional en Colombia se vincula al bloque de búsqueda que crea Estados Unidos, que crean la CIA, la DEA, el FBI, el Pentágono, para capturar, para eliminar al capo del cártel de Medellín, Pablo Escobar. Naranjo comienza a ser un hombre de la DEA, sobre todo, y de la CIA, sobre todo a través de las escuchas ilegales con tecnología de punta que le da Estados Unidos a la policía colombiana. Y desde entonces han pasado 20 años y en la Policía Nacional cayeron sucesivos mandos, sucesivos directores, generales, y Naranjo logró sobrevivir siendo coronel, lo hizo general Uribe, y bueno, ahora Naranjo tiene un problema, y es que el general Santoyo, general de la policía, que está en un juicio en Miami, también salpica al expresidente Uribe, pero quienes señalan como vinculado al narcotráfico y a los paramilitares al general Santoyo son dos de los máximos dirigentes de la narcoparapolítica, Mancuso y Don Berna, y otro que le llaman Macaco, que están extraditados en Estados Unidos. Entonces, la renuncia de Naranjo el mes pasado tiene que ver, desde mi punto de vista, con estos juicios en Miami, y Estados Unidos lo que trata es de salvarlo, sacarlo, porque es al hombre al que todavía pueden seguir exprimiendo, y trasladarlo a México, es decir, buscarle el cargo de asesor del virtual presidente electo por el PRI, Peña Nieto. Lo que tiene Naranjo es un gran conocimiento de la estructura de seguridad mexicana, porque la seguridad mexicana ha estado siendo triangulada entre México, Estados Unidos y Colombia. Y los nexos de México y Colombia a nivel policial se hacen muy sólidos a partir del año 2000 con la presidencia de Fox aquí en México. Y desde entonces existen acuerdos entre las policías de los dos países, y Naranjo es un hombre clave en esas redes. Entonces, digamos que es una transferencia, es como un pase futbolístico, ¿no?, que Colombia vende a México, entre comillas, ahora a un oficial, a un general de la policía, pero el chiste aquí creo que es que Estados Unidos se lo impone.
Era el periodista Carlos Facio, quien el pasado 30 de junio escribiera en el diario La Jornada un detallado reporte sobre el general colombiano. Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Que se maten entre ellos, pero que no involucren a la población civil.
Diferentes grupos armados ilegales que aparecen y lo mismo como al ejército que se retire de nuestra zona.
Disparos y ráfagas del helicóptero, y pues la gente se pone tensa en el sentido que parece que todavía el orden público, como dice el gobierno, no está controlada.
El presidente de la República acaba de salir, pero además donde se pregunta. Al final del discurso del presidente Juan Manuel Santos, se escuchaba a lo lejos las ráfagas de fusil. En ese sentido, ¿cómo se puede hablar de situación controlada por parte de las fuerzas militares cuando el propio mandatario, estando aquí en este punto, la situación, precisiones, pero sobre todo en ese marco de resistencia, eso no fue debatido? Ni siquiera se permitió la entrada a las comunidades para hablar con el presidente Juan Manuel Santos.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're in English, and mea culpa, pero este es en inglés. Entonces, necesario entender un poco de inglés para entender este programa. It's necessary to know English to really follow my show, particularly since I'm a fast babbler. The name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The time is 2 hours. I'll be going from 6 to 8 tonight. And I'm hoping to have Jack Smith on the show. He's a 75-year-old guy who's been relentlessly pursued by deputies, a Felton man who is accused of having a drug house. And he has lots of stories to tell about his trials and tribulations with deputies and courts. But we'll see if and when he shows up. We've talked to him before. I have, anyway. And I don't know, there may have been a little dialogue between you out there in the audience and Jack Smith, and maybe there'll be some today. We'll see if that works and if that happens. Before that happens, let's have a brief multicultural musical break, or intro, I should say, and I will be back, and hopefully so will you.
Ciao, bella, ciao, 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 es mi deseo seguir luchando. vuelva la libertad. Y si yo muero,
si yo muero
en el combate,
en el combate,
bella chao, bella chao, bella chao, chao, chao. Y si yo muero en el combate, tome en sus manos mi fusil. Soy comunista,
soy comunista,
toda la vida, toda
la vida,
bella chao, bella chao, bella chao, chao, chao. Soy comunista toda la vida y comunista he de morir. Soy comunista toda la vida y comunista he de morir. Y si yo muero,
si yo muero
en el combate,
en el combate,
bella chao, bella chao, bella chao, chao, chao. Y si yo muero en el combate, tome en tus manos mi fusil. Soy comunista.
Now friends, take my advice, get together and organize. Use challenge festivals and get your challenge here. Challenge the communist paper, that's right, the communist paper. Fight that wildcat, read all about it, get your challenge here. Take heed to foster bankers, take heed to parasites. We will tear you into pieces, workers of the world unite. With challenge the communist paper, communist paper, fight back, wildcat, read all about it, get your challenge here. So if you're tired of reading all about Trisha Nixon, get out the latest challenge, get your challenge here. Challenge the communist paper, that's right, the communist paper, fight back, wildcat, read all about it, get your challenge here.
And a little Stalinist propaganda to get the show going. That's from the 70s, Progressive Labor Party chants, songs, and tunes to hum as you go to the next demonstration. You know, I'm like to be eclectic in the show, and I like to be inclusive, and as long as they're not running the show, I've got no problems with communists, socialists, even Stalinists, provided they we are all, you know, essentially operating against a common, what would you say, protagonist, as old President Kennedy used to say in the old days. Because the real issue is not what label you go under, but what you're trying to do in terms of changing things. Problem with, of course, often communists who are centrally organizing is that they are replacing old bosses with sometimes worse bosses. But in the meantime, it's good to go after the corporations, and that there was a significant amount of that, and there is a significant amount of that still in the world today going on. It's important to realize that. Anyway, you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, and the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call-in number is 831-427-3772, 427-3772. Should be getting a call or two, or might be getting a call or two from a couple of unusual places. We'll see if that happens. And until then, we're going to continue to dredge back into memory lane and look at some other radical stuff. Here's a radical satire. Satirical group that I played before, the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe from Berkeley, and the original, well, one of the original pirate radio stations up there, Free Radio Berkeley, and one of the main Jolly Roger Comedy Troopers, or Troopies, Carol Denny, a singer and activist, is still writing a regular sheet called the Pepper Spray Times, in honor of the device used by police to break up protests and persuade activists to abandon their activism and get people to obey regardless of their conscience and regardless of the rightness or wrongness of the situation. Pepper spray. I guess that's sort of been supplanted with tasers and less than lethal weapons and sound weapons and so forth. But anyway, here's a little flashback to the mid-90s.
We positioned a secret microphone in a potted plant in the conference room at the UC Regents' offices. President Peltison is calling the meeting to order. Let's listen in.
This meeting will come to order. Gentlemen, we have a crisis on our hands. We spent nearly $3 million building that volleyball court in People's Park, and, well, frankly, we can't get anybody to use it. It looks like the Sahara Desert out there. We arrest people for building sandcastles in it. We arrest people for playing frisbee in it. We tried paying people $9.25 an hour, and we still can't put together a regulation game.
Yes, things are getting pretty desperate out there.
I know, President Peltison. We'll pay them more money.
Yes, well, I thought of that, too. The trouble is, while money can make a corporate CEO get down on his knees and kiss butt, these People Park protesters just aren't as easily bought. Besides, we look a little stupid raising fees all the time while paying volleyball players more than we pay out cluck typists.
That's true. Yes. How about replacing it with another basketball court? The basketball court seems very popular.
I thought of that too, Bagley. The trouble is, the basketball court is a little too popular with the wrong kind of people. People who...
Yes, people who...
How would you put it, Bagley? Delicately, Bagley.
Well, people who don't use enough suntan lotion.
Yes. That's exactly right, Bagley.
Yeah, that's right.
The people who use the basketball court don't use enough suntan lotion. You all understand that to have a successful people's park, we need a certain set of demographics.
Of course.
Regents have a responsibility to draw a better class of people to People's Park.
We
have to do something about that name, too.
Most assuredly. Perhaps a different kind of sport could attract a more suitable upscale crowd.
Like tennis.
Yes, that's the right idea, but we need a sport that more than four people can play at once.
Skiing?
Yes, right demographics now, and high suntan lotion quotient there, but tough maintenance in a California climate.
Water skiing or racquetball?
You're on the right track now. Hey, wait a minute. Say, this potted plant here, this potted plant is bugged.
No, it's pest-free. I think it just needs a little more natural light.
Oh, I mean there's an electronic bug in here. Somebody's been listening in, maybe even recording us. Call security. This is an unacceptable violation of the government's right to privacy. That's it. Give me that plant. Bagley, make a note to have all the conference rooms plants replaced with cacti.
I'll do that, President Peltison.
We'll solve this sports court fiasco another time. I've got to go play some golf. I'm just too upset. Meeting adjourned.
Okay. We've been secretly listening to another clandestine meeting of the University of California Regents addressing the pressing issue of volleyball. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more pirate broadcasts of the secret meetings of the UC Regents just as soon as we find yet another potted plant. And back to you in the studio.
And, of course, the volleyball courts were torn out after massive protests by the community. They were put in as a kind of a gentrifying element in the park, as you can kind of hear from the satire, as sort of a, well, many felt it was a precursor to further destructive activity in the park. And that pressure is still going on today with the destruction of the free clothing bin, police raids, the continued criminalization of homeless people who are in the park after dark, the destruction of, the upper third of the park's vegetation was essentially torn out. As I understand it, the rationale for that was they wanted to give the police more visibility into the park. So a lot of the work done by agriculture, what do you call them, horticulturists, was removed. And it's People's Park survives. I was up there a couple weeks ago doing interviews, played a few of them on the air. And I'll be talking a bit about Berkeley today in the last city council meeting, which apparently was quite turbulent. The mayor, in order to stop the protest, rammed through a vote on the Berkeley sitting ban initiative to put it on the ballot, which at least one writer has suggested is a way of diverting attention from all the other concerns and problems Berkeley has to turn it into a hot button. Those dirty homeless bums issue that might be able to polarize the city in a way that would benefit people like Mayor Bates and his conservative allies, who, of course, call themselves liberals and progressives, as they do down here. And we're going to be looking at that later. I'll be playing some, I don't know if I got any actual audio there, though. The Berkeley City Council does, like now, as the Santa Cruz does, stockpile and make its audio and video actually available for later viewing. And that's a positive step, although often here in Santa Cruz there's not much worth viewing and you don't get much chance to talk. I had a brief conversation with Mayor Don Lane yesterday about that. Lane has been quite pointed about not responding to my emails, though he looked dumbfounded, innocent, naive, and baffled when I suggested that he'd been doing that, and I wondered why. And he told me to shoot him an email. I will probably be doing that in order to get him to answer one of my latest questions, which usually is kind of pointless to send questions to Don Lane. Well, sometimes it's not, but usually he's... if it's about something as a pet project in which he's sensitive and vulnerable on, he will often turn the tables on you and accuse you of attacking him. And, of course, I do attack public officials for covering up things or not responding to things, but usually my concern is about the actual issues, not so much the predilections and peccadilloes of the public officials. That's not my main focus. I'm going to go for another one of those Jolly Roger skits, and then we're going to move into some other things, probably some street interviews, maybe some stuff from Berkeley. Who knows? Maybe a phone call or two from you, and maybe an interview with the still-not-here Jack Smith. And I wouldn't know if Jack is coming or not. He was scheduled for last week, but his ride had a problem. Her boyfriend got an accident, according to what I heard, and she had to take him to the hospital. Sounds like a legitimate excuse, but you never can tell. I never check these things out. I just sort of go with the flow. And that's what we do here at Free Radio. That's what I do anyway. So let's go with the flow of the Jolly Roger comedy troupe.
Police Commission President Harry Lowe is waiting nervously in a dark South of Market bar. A figure slips in the door and sits beside him.
Harry?
Yeah, Tony, keep it down, will you? You think I want people to see me talking to the chief of police?
Well, we could just be having a couple of beers together, you know?
Yeah, right. The San Francisco police conduct a police raid on an AIDS benefit New Year's Eve. An undercover cop commits hit and run on a blind man in front of witnesses. You can't keep your hands off all the female cops in your department. And we're supposed to be just sitting here having a beer.
Well, I can explain, Harry.
I hope so, Tony. I can't keep whitewashing this shit at the commission level. You know, it makes me look like a fool.
I can explain.
Yeah, explain to me how the most important thing for your cops to do on New Year's Eve was crash an AIDS benefit and pull up skirts.
Well, we did find a couple of drunks and...
It was New Year's Eve, Tony! Let me hear your explanation of your undercover officer running over a blind man and driving away from the scene.
Well, he would have gotten away if some Dudley Do-Right bystander hadn't blown the whistle.
Shut up, Chief. You seem to be missing the point here, Tony. I'm the police commissioner, and you're the chief of police. How in hell am I supposed to...
Get out of here.
What? Hey! You scared off all my customers with that act. Keep it down, will ya? Oh,
sorry, sorry. A couple of more beers, okay? And here's something for your trouble.
Oh, okay. But none of this chief of police stuff in here. I run a class joint.
Right, right, okay.
Listen, I know the boys get a little out of control now and then, but...
The boys? What about you, Romeo? We got a parade of female cops lined up from here to the Golden Gate who've been pawed by the chief of police, Tony Rivera, and want to testify about it.
Hey, keep it down, I said.
Sorry. A couple more beers over here?
I think you two have had enough.
Oh, Harry, nobody's paying any attention to all this stuff. Look at the Food Not Bombs Eradication Project. Nobody cares if we beat up Food Not Bombs people in broad daylight on camera in the middle of the Civic Center Plaza. Nobody's going to care about my officers running over blind people or raiding AIDS benefits. Trust me on this, Harry. Homosexuals, blind people, women. Nobody cares what happens to them.
Well, you better hope so, because there's only so much I can do to keep the police commission in line with this stuff. You gotta lower the profile, Chief, just until Jordan is reelected, okay? You're the fourth chief of police this administration has had, and we can't have any more of these scandals coming out of the police department. Cut out this running over blind people and pulling up skirts and can the Romeo act, for Christ's sake. It's like you're running some kind of bullshit Keystone Cop comedy.
That's it, that's it. You two take your little drama outside, all right? I am trying to run a class joint here.
Yeah, sure. We're on our way. Now, remember what I'm telling you, Tony. No more crashing AIDS benefits or running over blind people. And quit grabbing cats, okay?
I said out of here, you two.
Sorry. Sorry. We're just leaving.
All right, Harry. All right. Nag, nag, nag.
I'm telling you, the lowlife that stumbles in here sometimes.
Now, of course, that was, we're talking 1994 or 95. That's when Jordan, probably 95, when Frank Jordan, previously head of the chief of police of the city of San Francisco, was also mayor and initiated the Matrix program, which targeted Food Not Bombs. And it was actually then that I actually was arrested repeatedly, finally tried, convicted, and served a month in jail for serving rice, bagels, and salad, or was it rice and salad, or bagels and salad? One day, so I keep forgetting the menu. And there were over the course of Agnos and Jordan, the two mayors, one a so-called liberal, the other a so-called conservative, both equally hostile to the real grassroots, street-level activism of Food Not Bombs, there were over 1,200 arrests. And, but there was fight back, there was laugh back, there was real opposition, and Food Not Bombs established its right to serve food. There was no revolution in San Francisco, but the people retained their right to engage in at least a certain amount of limited dissent activity. I'm not quite sure how valuable that really ultimately is, but I've always been a big backer of that, however much it seems just sort of symbolic and intangible almost. Let's hear one more bit from the Jolly Roger comedy troupe from ages gone by, and then we'll return to the present.
I'm Barnaby Wilde, and I'm here today in the National Corporate Radio studio with a special guest, Captain Hook, poster boy for the rapidly growing micropower radio movement known to many as Pirate Radio. Ahoy there, Captain, and welcome to the studio.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're opening up our phone lines so our listeners can have a chance to ask their own questions of the old skull and crossbone pirate broadcaster purported to be the terror of the Federal Communications Commission. Before we do so, let's ask Mr. Hook, what's it all about, Captain?
It's about people using low-powered transmitters to put their own stations on the air without regard to current FCC regulations, so as to break the stranglehold on the free flow of information.
Well, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum! Come on, Hook! Aren't you just the kind of guy who has trouble following the rules?
Actually, no. It takes a lot of discipline to acquire the skills and knowledge to design transmitters. Our main concern is creating new, inexpensive opportunities for people to communicate. So to us, it's a free speech issue.
And one he's willing to walk the plank for, listeners. Well, let's go to Betty in Walnut Creek. Betty!
Hi, yes. I heard that pirate radio can make a plane fall out of the sky? Mr. Hook, how can you justify making planes fall out of the sky? Why, if I was in a plane, I would be pretty darn upset if some pirate radio broadcast made my plane fall out of the sky.
Micropower radio transmissions cannot make a plane fall out of the sky. What are you doing?
Oh, sorry. Just making a few sound effects here for the sake of drama. Hey, let's go to Ernie now in San Mateo. Ernie!
Yeah, I have trouble with my reception, and sometimes I pick up local bus route transmissions. Do you think it's because of all these radio pirates? I'm worried about having my soaps interrupted.
We don't interfere with other broadcasts. There's actually plenty of room on the FM band, even in most large metropolitan areas.
And we have Frank in Napa Valley. Ahoy there, Frank.
I just want to say, I think they ought to go ahead and make those rhino bullets. What if a really big dog came at you?
Well, that's very interesting.
Let's focus our spyglass over on Veronica in Berkeley. Veronica!
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just don't see what we need besides KPFA. I mean, you've got alternative news, alternative music, you got Terry Gross.
That's NPR, Veronica.
Oh, yeah, well, I get them mixed up, but KPFA takes care of having to worry about the left needing a voice on the radio. I just don't see what's all the fuss about needing more voices on the air.
Well, KPFA actually offers a somewhat limited perspective, and a lot of people actually believe they have moved to the right over the past few years. At any rate, you can expect them to be somewhat respectful of their corporate donors.
Captain Hook, aren't you just suggesting that people turn the airwaves into chaos, into a nightmare of unregulated, unpredictable programs that you couldn't even look up in the newspapers?
It's true that you couldn't necessarily predict the program.
Ha, you hear that, mateys? Let's go to Judy in Mill Valley. Judy!
Well, I just don't understand this. You mean you're unhappy with what's on the radio?
It's not just me, Judy. There are hundreds of people out there who would like to hear more points of view.
Really? Well, I'm sure I have everything I need on my radio.
Delighted to hear it.
Hey, let's hear from Morris in Antioch. Maurice!
You mean you don't like Ray Suarez? If you don't like Ray Suarez, well, you can just crawl back under the rock you crawled out of. Anybody who doesn't like Ray Suarez must be some kind of nutball.
Many of us believe that there are still unrepresented points of view which deserve inexpensive access to the airwaves.
Well, shiver me timbers. Let's sail off and have one last call from George in Burlingame. George!
Yeah, I just wanted to say that rhino bullet guy was right on.
Hey, thanks, George. Well, Captain, thanks for the free radio point of view, and next time, bring that bottle of rum, eh? Just kidding.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And a parrot. Hey, next time, put a parrot on your shoulder. All pirates need a parrot, don't you think so, listeners? Hey, thanks again to Captain Hook and all the radio pirates out there from Barnaby Wild, your corporate stooge at National Corporate Radio.
Yep, still relevant after all these years. You are tuned to Pirate Radio 101.3 FM in Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. The show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772. And now you will have the thrill of listening to a few of my interviews, which I pick up as I wander the streets of the town. Last couple days, actually, yeah, I think this is the last couple days, varied, some more interesting than others, a little of the life that's still happening downtown. Let's hear that, and perhaps let's hear from you folks out there, 427-3772, if you want to call in. I'm also going to be playing some more of the rather tumultuous Berkeley City Council meeting mentioned before, where the mayor rammed through this sitting ban initiative without allowing even his fellow council members to speak, and doing so in order to stop a protest demonstration that was happening in the chambers. We'll be able to actually hear it. You can see it if you actually tune in, but we'll be able to hear it. But and if you actually download it online, I should say, can't really tune in, but you can download in. Anyway.
A non-personal tape for broadcast, we hope. July 8th, 2012. So here we are downtown in front of the O'Neills. It's about 3:40, and we're listening to a singer who's doing some strumming and singing. Seems to be making a number of dollars. Zinc?
No, I don't know that one. Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So here I am again in front of Partisans and Twist. We have a guy coming from North Carolina. He's got
3,000 miles, over 3,000 miles, about died to get here. I was dying in North Carolina. I'm a disabled veteran. They're treating us worse than sewer rats there. Absolutely no help whatsoever. People starving, unemployed.
Where in North Carolina are you from?
Charlotte, the biggest city in the state of North Carolina.
And
I was born and raised there.
And you decided you had to get away to what, survive?
To survive. I was living out in the woods, dying of starvation.
You look pretty thin, man.
Yeah, I'm dying of starvation.
Your cheeks are hollow in a way you don't see happening with most people here.
No. Let me tell you something. I've had 10 baths in the last year and a half, because where I was living, I had no electricity, and no one cares about your health. You're absolutely nothing. The mental institutions there are as funny as a Mad magazine. They're all Alfred E. Newman. I'm on three different psych meds. They can't get them right. They could care less. They'll let veterans die. No help whatsoever for veterans. I mean, the flood of Mexicans has taken any work whatsoever. We have there's no work in North Carolina. You can't work if you want to.
So what kind of work were you doing before?
I drove a truck, a tractor and trailer, a hazardous material tanker for 32 years of my life.
And how old are you now?
I'm 53.
And your name is... Do you wish to give it?
No, just Jack. Call me Jack.
I'll call you Jack, Jack.
Yeah, I mean not...
That's okay. How long you been in town?
I came into town after serving the military here in the United States Army Infantry at Fort Ord, California for 2 years. I came into town and I was given the gold key by the Santa Cruz Police Department after they arrested me down at the wharf for smoking a cigarette. And they arrested me, impounded my pickup truck I've had for 25 years of my life, and they impounded my dog into the dog jail.
And was this?
And arrested and threw me in jail. And the district attorney throws it all out a few hours later. Meanwhile, I've lost a truck I've had for 25 years and a dog for 10 and can't get my truck out of impound. No. That's how they treat disabled veterans in, around here.
When did this happen?
This happened on the 26th of last month. Yes, sir, it did.
26th of June.
Exactly. I've got the paperwork right here to prove it.
And I believe you, although you're...
Believe me, ask the chief of police. He was right there. And the assistant chief of police. Okay? They have my DNA. They know I'm not have no wants or warrants, so therefore I'm running for mayor of Santa Cruz. Okay?
But what? Just under the name Jack, or...?
How about Rebel Jack? Jack the Rebel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I see you're also trying to get a little money for food here by offering some items for either sale or for exchange.
If you'd like to contribute to a man's nourishment, you know, right. I mean, that's all I'm asking, you know. But,
you've been here for a couple hours parked in this zone. I see it's...
I'm disabled. I got a placard.
You've been hassled for this.
No, I mean, really.
There's normally people on the streets who are displaying stuff. They're not supposed to get hassled, but they do sometimes.
Well, hey, what about that fellow with all the monkeys and stuff all over his truck, and it looks like a rolling zoo? I mean, what's wrong with me just putting a picture and a book and a...
It's not what's wrong with you. It's what's wrong with the police department, as you know.
You better believe that. Let me tell you, you ain't even heard the first of it yet.
Well, tell me some more.
Well, I can tell you, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut, okay?
No, you are elected mayor, of course.
Well... You know what? I'll settle for a seat on city council.
Well, there are four of them open, you know.
Oh, there are? Okay, there are four. I think Jack the Rebel may just run for one. You already have my DNA. You know I'm clean. I just come to town. I have a high school education plus some college. I'm a disabled veteran. I mean, I'm not... The only drug I use is cannabis. I love cannabis.
Do you have a card?
I'm working on that because I haven't been here long enough. You know, I've got to get my...
Plus, you got to kick down $100 for a recommendation and then $100 more for a card.
Well, I don't mind doing that. Listen, the doctors, you know, it's under doctor's care and everything, and that's the way I want it. I mean, that's the way it should be. So that's okay on the pay and doing that. It's just that, I mean, they took half, three quarters of an ounce of good marijuana that I bought with my own money. I mean, yeah, the officer said I could get it back, and I do want it back. And when I get my card, I'll go to try to get it back.
You can get your card, but can you get your car is the question.
Well, my dog's still in jail. And
your dog's name?
Annie. She's beautiful. She's so beautiful, people take pictures of her. She's a mixed breed shepherd, loves children, loves everybody. I've had her for almost 10 years of my life. She's my guide dog.
How long? So she's been in jail for the last 2 weeks?
Yes, since the 26th.
Aren't they going to kill her at some point if you don't get her out?
If they do, then I'll have to take legal repercussion, definitely.
I just wonder what how much time you have. I don't know.
So I'm not sure because, see, I knew her health would be okay, sir, because she was in the SPCA. I had to get my vehicle because it was $75 a day for storage in the impound yard. How can a disabled veteran afford such? That's highway robbery.
Banks to rob, you know.
That's highway robbery without a gun or anything. That's bleeding. That's pickpocket.
It sucks, Jack. It sucks. I thank you for the update.
Something's got to be done. America is just, I mean, we're starving. We have no work. People want to work. There's no jobs. People who can work They can't do anything. There's no work. We can't produce anything. We're going to run out of food like this.
Thank you, Jack.
Yes.
So you've actually bought stuff on Pacific Avenue,
I've
Jack.
I've got the receipts.
The glasses, you say you purchased at O'Neill's.
$170.
And you also bought a hat from?
It's a hat company for $100.
Nice looking hat.
Thank you, sir. I bought this right here.
Right.
I also bought a $40 shirt at O'Neill's. At O'Neill's.
Urban Outfitters?
No, it was Lopez. It cost me about $50.
So you're not just a passing bum panhandler.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a customer.
Just as I told the authorities, the police, I said I came to Santa Cruz to better myself. I didn't come here to be any kind of trouble to this great city. I love this city. I fell in love with it in 1983 and 84 when I was stationed at Fort Ord. And my life, I'm dying in Carolina. And because they won't even give you a meal. I mean, you can't find a place to eat.
Getting back to Santa Cruz, what exactly precipitated the latest police action that took your vehicle, took Annie, and so forth?
It was just a few minutes after 10 on the 26th, and the meters, according to what it says on them, they start...
10 in the morning or 10 in the evening?
10 in the morning, okay. And they start at 10 until 8 at night. It says specifically on the meter. So it was a couple of minutes after 10.
Up on the wharf?
Yeah, and... the policeman came. I had a cigarette, just a regular tobacco cigarette, and oh, you're smoking on the wharf. And as he approached the tailgate of my truck where I was sitting, I had about a foot long dowel, wooden dowel, like you hang your clothes on in a closet, the wooden dowel. And oh, you have a club. It was laying in the bed of my truck. I did not. I mean, I slept in the back of my pickup truck that I cannot lock, and there's a lot of homeless people. It was merely something to ward off someone who was going to cause me imminent danger. Therefore, I mean, if that was a club, I told him, I said, sir, there's a tool bag right there with a screwdriver in it that's twice as long as this club, a steel screwdriver. He's going to say I have a weapon when it's a wooden dowel.
Do you know the name of the cop?
I believe it was, I don't want to put his name out, no, I better, but it's all on record.
So then what happened?
Well, at that time, I said, sir, please, I was getting ready to leave. You know, the meter was only just a couple of minutes out of, I've been staying here, I paid $35 or $40 in the meter to watch the Woody's car show that was a couple of days prior, spending money at paying $3, $4 for a cup, one single cup of coffee at the very expensive shops there, and food, cigarettes at $6 a pack, and I smoke two packs a day, just spending disability money hand over, and then the police come in, arrest me, claim it's a felony. I'm a felony because I have a weapon.
Oh, the dowel.
Yes, the little wooden dowel. I think it's 12 inches long and not even, maybe a little bit bigger around than a quarter. That's what he called a weapon, okay?
And what did he say to you?
See what it was. I'm a truck driver, 32 years, 18-wheeler, right? It's a tire thumper for checking our tires to make sure they're not flat. It's not no kind of weapon. It's not meant to be a weapon. I was feloniously arrested.
You want to get in here?
Yeah, I was feloniously arrested, and the DA dropped all charges. Meanwhile, I've got to pay to get my 20.
How long were you held?
I was held from, the arresting time was like 10:30 in the morning until around 4, after 4 that afternoon.
Did you demand to be taken to a magistrate, or did they just suddenly release you?
They suddenly released me.
How much was your bail?
None. They dropped all charges.
Was there a bail before? Were you originally told?
No, all charges were dropped.
And so
meanwhile, my truck's locked up. I don't have any money. They've taken anyway. I had money tied up into things. You know, I was going to take care of myself, and they came along and destroyed, actually, a dream that I've had for years of my life. Coming out here to get, I knew I could better myself out here, and that's why I came. I didn't come to be no leech or termite onto the city here. I came to be a productive, a tax-paying citizen who
got your tribute.
I mean,
I'm sorry to hear all this. I'm going to pass it on to those who are on the radio.
Yes, really. I mean, thank you. I mean, it's, I don't know. We have got this.
Thank you, Jack. Out of the street, we have a musician in front of the Palomar Inn doing some banjo plunking.
And that's July 8th on Pacific Avenue. Wow. No update on what happened with Rebel Jack. Wow. He was displaying a couple of items on his van with a sign, essentially looking to either get a donation or something to, if you believe his story, which I kind of do, you know, although, you know, I have no independent way of verifying it. It's so typical of the kind of the police machine that grinds people up. The series of downtown ordinances have been created to allow them to engage in that kind of abusive behavior, and ratified by our mayor, Don Lane, Vice Mayor Hillary Bryant, City Manager Martine Bernal, the whole gang of well-dressed thugs who are, you know, ringing people for money as they go through town. You know, dump your money in the stores and leave. This guy did, but it didn't do any good. Wow. Well, I'm going to turn now to Berkeley, where there was this second council meeting. I played a bit of the first one a few shows ago around the issue of the ever-stupid, ever-recurring sitting ban proposal that merchants bring up. Essentially, it's the Berkeley version. They had a sitting ban before that was thrown out by the courts and thrown out by the city council as well, and they have a ban against sitting downtown under some circumstances in some areas. But they want a harsher ban, similar to San Francisco's sit-lie ban, which apparently has gotten a lot of tickets, but produced very little satisfaction on either side of the ideological divide, either from merchants or from the people that victimize, the people supposed to help, or the merchants who will get rid of the riff-raff around their stores. You know, and I suppose it helps people who, merchants who have sidewalk cafes, because if you want to sit down, you got to buy yourself a drink, and then you can sit down. You know, don't bother. Same thing is true in Santa Cruz. To sit on the sidewalk in Santa Cruz is very problematic. You have to be 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a crosswalk, 14 feet from a phone, 14 feet from a bench, 50 feet from a change-making machine, 14 feet from a directory sign, 14 feet from a sculpture, though, thank goodness, all those penguin or pelican, I guess they're penguin sculptures, are gone, and I don't think they've been replaced yet, so they are, I don't think they're currently little sort of nexuses of forbidden zones where people, little ways of creating you-can't-sit-here zones. But Santa Cruz has a really similar kind of sick mentality, which has been institutionalized by Downtown Association and the City Council, sort of the shills for the Downtown Association on these kinds of issues, and the police department. And, of course, we have even worse people coming up who are specifically targeting homeless people, not just those who show up downtown and dare to enter the sacred commercial spaces that aren't really commercial spaces, they're public spaces on the sidewalks that are supposed to be shared by all groups of people, not just tourists and those who are trying to lure their money into the shops, but everybody in the community, including poor people who, yeah, they may sit on the sidewalk with a sign saying, yeah, I'm poor. Have you noticed? There are foreclosures going on. There's the job market sucks. Need spare change. Or, you know, people who are running their little rackets with money, too. You know, that happens, too. You know, I don't deny that as well. But the fact of the matter is it's supposed to be an area that all kinds of folks are entitled to use. And it's been turned into a essentially privatized, gentrified commercial zone. And you see that the way street performers are treated with the infamous move-along law that destroyed the voluntary street performers guidelines, Santa Cruz's unique and successful experiment in mutual, non-violent and non-lawyer accommodation, where we had what's called the voluntary street performers guidelines, where either a merchant or a street performer or just somebody, a resident, could go up to someone and ask them to move after an hour, and there would be peer pressure that would encourage them to move. It wasn't a matter of some cop coming along and saying, I'm looking at my watch, you got to get going, which is what we have now. And we have police just arbitrarily moving people along without any kind of complaints or concerns, doing so because they want to run certain people around, run certain people out of town, exercise their authority. It's kind of a sad thing. Or you have a heckler's veto, somebody who just wants to get rid of a particular group or musical group or even ideological group. If you have a table and you're registering voters, they can supposedly tell you not only you have to move every hour, you can't come back for 24 hours. That's the Santa Cruz law. Anyway, Berkeley has an initiative it was putting forward, and I should say the mayor was putting forward, Mayor Tom Bates, a masturbator, probably not a masturbator, actually, probably just jerking us all off in this situation, or not really jerking us off. It's hard to find the proper words, but when you create laws that repress people in order to cater to the fears, prejudices, and profiteering fantasies of the merchant community, there's got to be a word for that. Anyway, I'm going to see if I can actually play some of this, and it's going to come on at some point shortly, and when it does, you'll be hearing the debate and discussion. Until that happens, I'm going to give you a little bit of the background as I've been able to research it. And I've been sending out stuff on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email. That's an organization I work with. If you're interested in homeless civil rights or the civil rights of poor people on the streets, give me a call on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Leave me a message that you want to be on the Huff email list. Huff has got projects in mind. We are trying to get together some information gathering and some organizing around homeless people to see if the latest gambit by the police department, which apparently has issued statements to the media, the Sentinel, Santa Cruz Patch, some of the TV stations, that they plan to eliminate homeless camps in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay,
and here we have the Berkeley City Council meeting. We'll turn to that now.
Line up. We're going to, obviously, you have 1 minute now. Here's the thing. If you need more time, please bring the person who's yielding the time forward with you, rather than just pointing to somebody in the audience, okay? We'd ask you to do that. Okay, thank you.
So before we start public comments, Mayor Bates, I just want to make one announcement, and we'll obviously entertain whether to accept reports later, but...
Sure.
I have submitted a proposal, which there are copies right there, which is an alternative to the proposal to put this on the ballot. I want everybody to be made aware of the fact that there is a proposal. Copies are available.
I second the motion that we accept that as a late report.
And also I have an item, too. Maybe you take that as a... Office amendment is also proceed with my. I'm voting for.
You vote to accept my item.
I'm going to vote for yours, come okay. Forward. Sure.
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. You second?
So we're accepting the compromise from Councilmember Adegeen, and we're accepting the mayor's revision.
Right, sorry.
Yeah, to the findings.
And this is an interesting proposal that I also sent out as an email to people on the Huff email list. The sitting ban being proposed for an initiative that was ultimately passed at the Berkeley City Council prohibits sitting on commercial sidewalks from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. except for a medical emergency, in a wheelchair, on a public bench or bus stop, authorized by a permit, and Santa Cruz actually has a 24-hour ban on sitting on the sidewalks if you're within 14 feet of a building, which means on all non-downtown commercial sidewalks you can't sit down because they're all 10 feet wide or less. It's only on Pacific Avenue that the sidewalks are broader. So that's something I usually want to keep bringing up. It's interesting. There is a section on the sitting ban initiative in Berkeley that states, the section shall not be applied or enforced in a manner that violates the U.S. or California constitutions. Prior to enforcement, the city shall develop and adopt rules, regulations, and procedures to ensure it is not applied or enforced in a manner that violates the U.S. or California constitutions. Necessity of a warning prior to citation. No person may be cited for a violation unless a peace officer first warns said person that his or her conduct is unlawful and the person is given a chance to stop said conduct. One warning by a peace officer to a person is sufficient for a 30-day period. And there was such a provision once in the earlier sitting ban passed by the city of Santa Cruz. And in fact, there may still be such a provision. But tickets tend to be handed out with some generosity by officers Winston, Warren, Forbes, and so forth, the downtown squad. Again, to me, it's just so blatantly unconstitutional that I wince. I don't have the commissioner's proposal, but I think what happened to this commissioner that we were just listening to in Berkeley, who proposed an alternative to the sitting ban, I'm going to see if I can actually find it. And I'm going online. Take a quick look. It's interesting. They had this discussion you just heard where the mayor agreed to allow this proposal be discussed, but then he quickly moved in toward the end of the meeting. This became a scandal the next day where the three council members actually had a press conference and demanded that the whole meeting be nullified because the mayor did not allow this proposal to come forward and did not allow public testimony to be concluded. But here's still a little more of that public testimony, or actually a little of that public testimony.
The measure.
Okay, call the roll.
Councilmember Mile?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Anderson?
Here.
Okay.
Please, take your conversations outside.
Aragin?
Yes.
Capitelli?
Yes.
Wengrath?
Yes.
Worthington?
Yes.
Wozniak?
Yes.
Mayor Bates?
Yes.
Okay. Well, please bring somebody if you want to yield. Bring the person up with you, please. Okay. Who's first?
Yep.
There we go.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Beverly Slapin. This is going to be very, very short. First, I just want to acknowledge and thank Max and Chris and Jesse for their unwavering moral commitment. And I want to acknowledge and thank all the young people in this room and outside and in the streets of Berkeley for their courage in the face of this horrible, horrible ballot measure. I want to go on record in opposition to the cold-blooded, mean-spirited, racist, unconstitutional ballot measure that assaults and criminalizes poor people for the economic crimes of the rich. Whatever happens tonight, however this goes tonight, however you vote on this hideous ballot measure, you can be sure that this struggle will continue. And I yield the rest of my time to the floor.
I yield my time to my new friend, Napoleon.
I yield my time to Napoleon.
Forget Sunday. Forget. I'm not sure I could. You say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through. Without, there's nothing left for me to figure out. I'll pay the price. and I'm still paying. Oh, I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. Still mad as hell, and I don't have the time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make a right. I probably wouldn't if I could. So mad as hell, I can't bring myself to do what you think I should. Oh, sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the cars roll in.
And the problem with this is the singer is continually going away from the mic, and it looks like the mic may have some defect. Studio equipment seems to be working, so my apologies for difficulty hearing this.
I'm just sitting on the sidewalks and day, wasting time. Cause some of us don't even wonder, and some of us don't even care. Couldn't we just love each other? Isn't there enough to share? Oh, there's got to be a way to connect Berkeley today, and together we'll relieve the pain. Oh, there's got to be a way to connect our human race, and together we'll bring on a change.
Hi, my name is Alejandra, and I'm an intern for the city of Berkeley. I'm going to be reciting a quote from Martin Niemöller. First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. And if Martin Niemöller was alive today, he would say, then they came for the homeless, and there is no one left to speak for us. Do not neglect the people to sit in the sidewalks, especially when the sidewalks and the streets belong to everyone in the community. It doesn't matter whether they are homeless or not. All of us as a community need to come together to make a change.
My name is Oscar Ortiz, and I'm going to yield my time to Juan.
My name is Ann Fagan Ginger, and I come from the 1930s when sit-down strikes were valuable. And I would like to make the point for Mickelejohn Civil Liberties Institute and the National Lawyers Guild that any proposal to put on the ballot or in any way say people cannot sit down violates the human rights ordinance that this city council passed in 1990. It violates the United Nations Charter, which says that every human being shall have the right to human dignity. It violates the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which says the same thing. It violates the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination and the International Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. And all of those four treaties are the supreme law of the land under the U.S. Constitution, and they also cover the city of Berkeley. And I think it is outrageous to suggest that in a time when people are sitting down on the street because they do not have a job or they are not in good medical condition, when many of them volunteer to work in the military and come home completely destroyed, is against any kind of principle that the city of Berkeley should live with. And therefore, I don't see how you possibly could vote to discuss in any way or put on the ballot or do anything else to any concept that you cannot sit down in this country.
proxy for this.
Hello. I'm Andrew, the behavior object, and I've been a voter in Berkeley since 1966, and I am very concerned about the issue of behavior management because it's a form of discrimination. The present policy of the United States of America is to behavior manage the peoples of the world. That's our national security policy. And we're doing it very strongly in Afghanistan, but we're doing it all over the world. If we're going to build that same type of social approach into the way we do life in Berkeley, we are going to tear down a lot of things many of us, including many of the people who are supporting this measure, have taken up in terms of how we are going to make a positive, formal direction so that we compassion in charge rather than behavior management.
I'll try. Is that on? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Once I built a railroad, made it run. It's time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? I've lived in downtown Berkeley for 20 years now on Shattuck Avenue, and this keeps coming up, and I don't know why you do it. You know it's unconstitutional. You know it will be thrown out. And it's a big waste of money and energy and passion and all the things we need to do to build things up. And it's just, I don't know why you're doing it. Anyway, thank you.
As a private citizen, I watched the news last night on TV, and there was a young homeless person from Santa Cruz, and he talked about how he kept getting citations, and he's getting more citations. So he guesses he'll just keep piling the citations. And a couple of months ago, I also saw in San Francisco on the news where they were talking about the sit and lie, and someone said, well, we move, when they asked me to sit, I just moved to another place to sit. So I understand the concerns of small business, but is this really the answer, the way to go about it? And I've read the proposed ballot measure, and I find it extremely punitive and inconsistent with Mayor Bates' statements that he made about directing persons into case management. And so I hope if you do move forward with this, that what you do is also incorporate language that includes case management type services, such as a U drop-in center, such as a 12-month-a-year shelter,
thank you.
And
thank you,
a possible and a peer respite, such as they have in Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Brittany, and I'm a Cal student and an intern for the city council. And I attended the press conference on June 12th this year, and one of the council members quoted that the key is keeping these ordinances in the back pocket unless they're absolutely needed, and that the approach is humane and consistent. Personally, I feel there's really nothing consistent about a back-pocket approach. That sounds a lot like selective enforcement and, as Max Anderson pointed out, economic profiling. Moreover, the goal of this is, some council members have claimed, is to build trust with the homeless, yet these same council members have said that the threat of incarceration is going to be used as a tool to guide these people into services, but I really don't think that threatening someone with incarceration is a great way to build trust.
Good evening, Council. Gonzalo Lozano, intern City Council. Economic development is the solution you are looking for. The Southside Plan and the economic development are essential to revitalize Berkeley, in specific the Telegraph area. For instance, the Telegraph Merchant Association wants to improve pedestrian safety and pedestrian lighting. This will not only encourage more foot traffic, but will also transform Berkeley into a more welcoming community. Furthermore, the Telegraph Livability Coalition advocates 21 real-world solutions, such as to explore and celebrate street vendors and promote street vending, and to address parking and identify vacant sites and offer assistance. I urge you to implement constructive policies that will shape the future of Berkeley in regards to success to economic success. Effective policies are in the Southside Plan and the Telegraph Livability Coalition. I urge you to fully implement the Southside Plan and to shift your focus back to the community. Thank you.
Hi, I yield my time to Karina.
Hi, my name is Karina Tai, and I'm a UC Berkeley student and Berkeley City Council intern. And I'm here today to speak out against the anti-SIT ordinance. I would like to present several political, economic, and moral arguments against this ordinance. Politically, there are several laws already in place that illustrate the ineffectiveness of this ordinance. Firstly, San Francisco has recently implemented a similar model that has proved ineffective. For instance, in the past 2 years, the same 10 people have received 90% of the citations. Clearly, this is not solving the homeless issue at large. Meanwhile, in Berkeley itself, we already have an existing law that bans lying on the streets and limits a maximum of 2 bags per person. Yet I think, as we can all see, enforcement is also clearly lacking. Economically, the official report puts the cost of placing the bill on the ballot at $26,000. However, factoring in police overtime for enforcement, lawsuits that question the constitutionality of this law, and simply clogging up the courts, the total cost of this bill will amount to well over $100,000. Finally, in moral terms, contrary to Mayor Bates' statement, this law does criminalize the homeless population. A $75 fine for a first violation only serves to criminalize the most vulnerable population in this city. In short, the anti-SIT ordinance does nothing to help the homeless issue in Berkeley. Along with its moral, legal, and political implications, I urge you to stop this ordinance. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ryan Shum, and I am an intern for the City Council. Tonight, I would like to share a few words from Frederick Douglass. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet discourage agitation are people who want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out what people will submit to, and you will find out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will be continued until they are resisted in either words or blows or both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those they oppress. Tonight, we the people of Berkeley are resisting with words and speaking out against the injustice and wrong that is the sit and lie ordinance. We will not continue to endure this oppressive policy any longer and ask that you vote no and pursue policies with more tangible benefits instead. Thank you.
Evening, Mayor Bates, members of the City Council, John DeClercq with the Berkeley Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce does support placing this measure on the ballot. We believe that the people in the City of Berkeley should decide what's good for the City of Berkeley. Commercial districts are the concern of all of Berkeley, not just those few of us who are able to be here tonight to attend council meetings. This measure, by the way, does not impact people on the streets from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. Does not address them, does not affect. This measure acknowledges that outreach is to occur to help those who need or who want services. There are already ordinances in the city about behavior, but this measure is the final piece of the puzzle that is needed to make our commercial districts welcoming. We believe that the passage of this measure and the West Berkeley Plan exhibit the council's leadership. We believe that the citizens will pass it. Thank you.
I am Dan McMullen. Your master has spoken, Mr. DeClercq.
You know, I noticed that there's a lot of city councilmen on this council that will do anything for business, but when you get 1,000 people up in this council, you just keep marching in step with the business people. I don't know how much money they're putting into your coffers for this next election, but it's got to be a lot of money to sell us out. All right? When I go, you know, somebody came down my driveway a couple weeks ago, ran over my trash can. When we called the police to get a cop over there, they said, bring out your cell phone and hand them to them. We're too busy to send anybody over there. All right? My kids are afraid to play on the streets because there's been a shooting in our neighborhood, and we're worried our kids are going to get shot. It's ridiculous. And you're selling us out. Daryl, you're selling us out. All right? All right, tell us about these facades you want to put up on the avenue, all right? Your candidacy is a facade, and somebody needs to take your place on this council because you're selling out your neighborhood.
Thank you, Dan. You've never answered one of my phone calls, ever.
Thank you, Dan.
In all the years that you've been on the council.
Thank you, next, please.
I surrender my time to Eliana.
You're welcome.
Good evening. My name is Eliana Ramirez. I'm a PhD student at the School of Social Welfare at UC Berkeley, and I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker. I've worked with veterans, I've worked with homeless people, and I have also worked with incarcerated folks as well. I'm not sure that everyone who's on the council who's making the decision tonight has ever been homeless. I'm not sure if you've served overseas. I'm not sure if you were rejected from your family because of who you love, or were beaten and forced to the streets. But I did want to share some information with you so that Mayor Bates, this evening, when you go to sleep, sir, Daryl Moore, when you go home and you take a comfy seat in a chair, I ask you to consider the young ladies who use crack cocaine at night so they can stay awake so they will not be raped while they're asleep. I ask you to consider the 68,000 veterans who are currently homeless at this moment. 14,000 of them have been homeless for a year or more and have at least one very serious chronic illness. Ladies and gentlemen, when I walk to school in the morning, I speak to homeless people because they are my brothers and sisters, and I understand that it's one life-threatening illness that would make me homeless. It is one major travesty in my family that we could all be out on the streets. Shame, shame, shame that we would put this to a vote when the people who are going to be impacted the most themselves cannot vote. In Espanol, I would say vergüenza, shame. 20% of the homeless youth who are on the streets are LGBT, and yet only 10% of the youth in the entire country are LGBT. While homeless youth typically experience severe family conflict, LGBT youth are twice as likely to experience sexual abuse before the age of 12.
Thank you. Time is up. Thank you.
I got my minute.
Thank you. Gracias. LGBT youth, once homeless, are at higher risk for victimization, mental health problems. Mayor Bates, I appreciate your eye contact while I'm speaking. Thank you, sir. And unsafe sexual practices. 58.7% of LGBT homeless youth have been sexually victimized, compared to only 33.4% of heterosexual homeless youth. Let me repeat that. 33% of heterosexual homeless youth have been sexually assaulted. Over 68% of homeless LGBT youth have been sexually assaulted. Are these the people that we really want to give tax, to ask them to pay for... Excuse me, I'm so nervous and upset about this. Are these the people that we want to ask to pay for the tickets that we're going to give them? These tickets are going to pile up over and over again. And we all know that rehabilitation does not happen in prisons and jails. I am begging of you to consider your own children. If this recession doesn't turn around, folks, a lot of us could end up on the streets. The people who are living on the streets are the people for whom the rest of us have benefited off of. People who are poor in this country are poor because the rest of us are living off of their backs. I beg of you to please consider the reality of what you're asking the voters to consider, and that voters, most of us, have never been homeless. Most of us have never served in the military. Hopefully most of us have never been sexually assaulted either. I ask you to think about this from your hearts. Thank you.
For me, this issue comes down to a very simple question. Are we willing to hurt people over sitting in the streets? Are we willing to take away their money? And if they're unable to pay, are we willing to throw them in jail? And if they panic when the police come to take them to jail, are we willing to have them be shot? If one person is shot as a result of us illegalizing sitting on the sidewalk, is it worth it? If it reaps economic benefits for the businesses of Berkeley, is it worth it? If this ordinance goes on the ballot, and if it then passes and goes into effect on July 1st, I invite anyone who would like to sit with me on the sidewalk to join me.
Thank you. So, I'm moving that we extend the meeting until 12 o'clock.
Second.
So please call the roll on the motion.
Councilmember Mayo. Moore. Anderson.
Yes.
Aragin. Capitelli.
Yes.
Wengraff. Councilmember Worthington.
Yes.
Wozniak.
Yes.
Mayor Bates.
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes.
Okay.
I cede my time to the next speaker.
Thank you.
I yield my time to Matthew Owens.
In the Soviet period in Russia, any visitor from the West would be told there are no poor, no alcoholics wandering the streets. The visitor would be shown the clean, unobstructed streets of Moscow, free of indigents. The indigents, of course, were taken to jail and beaten and left there. I oppose placing the ordinance against sitting on the sidewalk on a November ballot on constitutional, moral, and religious grounds. The courts throughout the United States are in conflict as to the constitutionality of a wide range of ordinances criminalizing homelessness. But the tide is turning against criminalizing homelessness. And what are we doing in Berkeley going against that tide? The Eighth Amendment makes it illegal to impose excessive fines or administer cruel and unusual punishment. Clearly, $75 is excessive for someone out of work. Denying a place to exercise necessary human functions is cruel and unusual punishment. It has been shown that criminalization of homelessness restricts the ability of the less fortunate human being to find housing and jobs. It impairs the livelihood of those human beings, that of collecting alms from the more fortunate. The 14th Amendment guarantees the right to travel, which may also be interpreted and has been recently construed to mean as well the right to remain somewhere uninterrupted. It may be immoral as well as illegal to impose sanctions on a minority for the comfort, financially or aesthetically, of the majority. It may be immoral to put property before people. It may be immoral to dissolve the principles of tolerance and inclusion in favor of corporate interests and to create a climate of fear and exclusion for a minority. Neither Buddha, nor Jesus, nor Muhammad would stand with the proponents of such a bill.
Good evening, Mayor Bates, council members. I'm here today speaking as a resident of Berkeley, urging you to postpone voting on the sit ordinance. I believe Councilmember Aragwin's alternative proposal deserves more consideration. One in four homeless Americans are veterans. One in six foster children have experienced homelessness. Many of these people have seen everything and risked everything. from war to sustained domestic abuse. I understand the motivations of those supporting this measure. Your desire to help our city's small business community is admirable. But I'm not convinced the sit-in ordinance is the right approach, and I know you can postpone this vote to consider alternatives. I think what is needed, beyond improved mental health services, is expanding the ambassador program, allowing merchants to stay up open later, and expanding open-air business. These are the eyeballs on the streets we need to keep our streets safe. Councilmember Aragon's alternative deserves a closer look. Thank you for your consideration.
Hello, I'm Marcia Fineland, and I'm speaking. I'm a resident of Berkeley, and I'm speaking for myself and also for the Alameda County Peace and Freedom Party. Well, I read this thing with interest, and Section F says the purpose of this ordinance is solely to address the deleterious impacts of sitting on public sidewalks. Accordingly, it is the intent of the voters that this ordinance be interpreted and applied in a manner that does not discriminate against homeless, mentally ill, or other residents of the city based on their status. Well, this is actually serious. Whereas Anatole France wrote, in irony, the law in its majestic equality forbids the rich as well as the poor from sleeping under bridges. Let's get real. We know who this is aimed at. Now, I see that this is trying to address a problem, and I think the problem is the economic collapse of downtown Berkeley. The fact that people are having trouble holding on to their businesses. Now, can we really blame the homeless and the mentally ill and people who are losing their jobs and are losing their homes for the economic crisis? I don't think so. The homeless people, the people who sit on the streets, are victims of the same things that the small business people are victims of, that we're all victims of, and that is our rapacious economic system. So I'd like to suggest that rather than creating scapegoats, that we all join together and do something to change our economic system.
I'm Edith Hallberg, and for all the reasons and more, I am against this ordinance. As a Grey Panther, I have sat down on the sidewalk in front of the Oaks Theater every Monday at 5 o'clock. As a Code Pinkster, I have sat down on Shattuck Avenue in front of the Marine Recruiting Station every week in response to my country's ill-gotten military stuff. I also bring a blue chair with me to Solano Stroll, the festivals, and any darn place I please to sit down because my back and my feet get tired. If my rights are destroyed, then everybody else's are destroyed, and their rights are linked with mine. If you insist... Oh, any time? No?
Thank you, Edie.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Phoebe Sorgan. I cede my time to Laverta Allen, and thank you, Aragon, for the alternative plan. Please read my letters.
I'm Laverta Allen, and I'm the mother of a mentally ill young man, 50-some years old. He's been ill since 18. Member finished through the Berkeley schools. And obviously, I've been black some 80-plus years. And I don't mean it to be funny. I see this ordinance as very discriminating. And as a black person, I know, I smell, I sleep discrimination every day of my life. This ordinance will prove that Berkeley is no longer a place for people of all races. That you've set up a system here that is for the merchants. What are these young people supposed to do from 10 at night until 7 in the morning? You don't give a damn what happens to them from 10 at night to 7 in the morning. You're only interested from 7 in the morning to 10 at night for the business purposes. I had several lawyers to help me review your ordinance, but from what I see on this council, it's not worth me wasting my time to try and tell you that this is an ill-thought-out ordinance. It is not going to achieve what you want. You say it's the only practical solution. I've never heard of only being a viable term on anything that affects people's lives. There are always more ordinance, and you need more opportunities that need to be examined. I offer my services as a business person, a retail person, an educated person, a mother, to help you develop an ordinance. I know a bell when I hear it. I offer you my services to help you. Mr. Bates, I helped get you elected the first time. I am really disappointed in what I've seen of your behavior tonight.
Thank you.
About
25 people are trying to yield her time, so please stop disrespecting her.
All right. I think I am willing to offer my time as a mother, as a citizen, as a voting member of this community to help you develop an ordinance that would better address the needs of the very people that you are trying to destroy in this city. I've served on the state and the federal National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. I know something about this, and I don't think any of you know very much about it. When I see you don't know what it's like to sit here and be a citizen, and you ask me to vote on something that might very well be detrimental to my son and to make him a criminal. And where are these people going to get $75 to pay for a ticket? I spoke to the police department, and nobody there had been asked what it was going to cost them to administer this program. It is ill-conceived, and I hope that we can get the majority of the council to vote against putting this on the ballot until there's far more success in terms of what we're going to do.
Thank you.
And you're listening to the Berkeley City Council's discussion, I should say the oral communication, around the Sitting on Commercial Sidewalks initiative brought forward on behalf of merchants in Berkeley by Mayor Tom Bates and ultimately passed by the Berkeley City Council after a riotous council meeting, according to the descriptions I've heard in the media. You're hearing the pre-tumult testimony of people urging this not be put on the ballot. Let's hear a little more, and I may be playing some more of this on Sunday, when I do a morning show that goes from 9:30 to 1:00 in the afternoon. You can also hear this testimony in its entirety and see the speakers in a televised replay of this at the City of Berkeley website. So you might want to check that out if you find this discussion interesting, inspirational, educational, what have you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Igor Tregub. It may come as no surprise to most of you that, unlike some previous speakers, I don't have a beautiful singing voice. So I'm going to just talk cold, hard business sense tonight. It costs almost $30,000 just to put this on the ballot. And it's not guaranteed that this is going to pass. If anything has been shown from the divisive measures put on the ballot in San Francisco and Santa Monica. But if it doesn't pass, then voters are going to be angry, and they're going to systematically vote down every single city measure as well. This is going to sink the water bond measure. This is going to derail street repaving, and this is going to repave over the pool's pond. There are other more humane alternatives here, as proffered by Council Members Sarugin and Anderson. Please do the right thing.
Thank you.
Do not pass this draconian measure that's also bad for us and our taxpayer dollars.
Thank you.
I yield to the next speaker.
Good evening. My name is George Littman. I'm the chair of the Berkeley Peace and Justice Commission. To echo LaVerda, we also would offer our services. As I mentioned yesterday at the Agenda Committee meeting, in my own name, I'd like to support Jesse Aragon's position, his recommendation, particularly the language at the top, direct the city manager to convene a working group of representatives of city council, city staff, the homeless and police review commissions, and other stakeholders such as business owners, homeless persons, attorneys representing homeless clients, students, and service providers to develop a compassionate sidewalks plan. This is a very positive initiative. We would like to contribute to this as the Peace and Justice Commission, as we're doing with the joint subcommittee with the Commission on the Status of Women, and members of specifically Linda Mayo of the City Council. In our mandate, which was developed by this council, it says the council finds as follows: peace is not a fictitious, tranquil end state, but the process of solving differences constructively, creatively, and nonviolently. Also, peace is inseparable from justice. Also, our best protection lies in initiating, devising, and promulgating peaceful and just policy alternatives. These are the principles of the City of Berkeley that we bring to all of our work, and that we would bring to coming up with a better plan that relies on not on punitive measures, but on, for example, building park benches or sidewalk benches for people to sit on. I'm going to bring up my colleague, Diana Bone, who's going to read our resolution.
And we'll hear that resolution probably on Sunday. We've been going for about half an hour or more on this, and it is educational to see the different kinds of considerations raised by each speaker. Almost all of them opposed to this initiative. I guess there were two speakers who supported it, one from the Chamber of Commerce and one from, I think, some other business group. Maybe I'm just imagining the second speaker. There is a pretty common strong front against this initiative, to no avail. As at the Santa Cruz City Council, it's a done deal and rolls right through. Although, apparently, not without some tumult, which, again, we'll get into, or you'll be able to see if you don't already check it out online in the next few days yourself on the City of Berkeley website on Sunday when I get back. And if you come on back and tune into the show, I think we'll be doing that. I think it's time for a little comic interlude, so here's a little more from the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, one of my favorite groups.
Radio Berkeley and San Francisco Liberation Radio have been on the air continuously for weeks in San Francisco and Berkeley. What does the public think of these fledgling micropower stations? Are they meeting the community's needs? For an answer, we asked people on the street to tell us what they think of free radio.
Well, I just don't think there's enough coverage of the O.J. Simpson trial. I need those details about Prosecutor Marcia Clark's wardrobe, or I can't hold my own around the water cooler.
I've been listening, and I like the music and all, but I'm just not hearing enough about Tanya Harding. Those free radio people need to dig deeper and get the real story out to the public about her costumes. I mean, they're so tacky.
How about you, sir?
Lady, it sucks.
There's clearly not enough reliance on opinions and evaluations by experts, these ordinary members of the community. Meanwhile, what do they know?
Free radio should cover sports. All hockey all the time.
Free radio doesn't have enough commercials. I like the commercials. Commercials are the best part.
It sucks.
Free radio is great, but there's not enough commuter traffic coverage. I really need to know how long the wait is at the toll plaza on a daily basis.
Free radio talks too much about police brutality. Why, our boys in blue need to get more respect.
More OJ. All OJ. All the time.
Well, the public seems pretty disappointed in our broadcasts. We encourage anybody who doesn't like what's on their radio to make some radio of their own.
And how jolly is the Jolly Roger comedy troupe? Pretty darn jolly. Well, perhaps for a less jolly side of things, let's get back to Santa Cruz. And I remind you, you have 20 minutes in which to grumble, gripe, praise, just chat about whatever's on your mind, give me some updates. The call-in number here is 427-3772. If you'd like to listen in, well, if you are listening in and you'd like to say something to those who are also listening in, do it now while you still can. Uncle Dennis will be coming on the air, but I don't think he's usually taking a lot of calls, though it's possible he may take some. I don't know. I only listened to the beginning of his show, but let's hear something from the streets.
Clyde here, stalking the streets of Santa Cruz, but he doesn't look homeless. He looks very well groomed. He's got a neat backpack. His shirt isn't dirty. Are you hiding, concealing your true identity?
Well, I've been engaged in some upward mobility there, thanks to the largesse of the county, really. I mean, they've gotten a lot of help from social workers and
softening
sort of
your tune of criticism, eh, Colin Campbell Clyde?
Oh, not in the least bit. There's all kinds of problems with the way things are run, which I can, well, not the least being that I have to deal with a housing manager who would rather send threatening letters than just sit down and have a conversation with me. That's her solution anytime the problem comes up, is to issue threats and ultimatums, which I think is a pretty limited solution set, if you ask me.
So wait a minute, isn't that the Obama way?
Yes, it is. And boy, I am just...
You gotta be tough when you're dealing with scum like you. Scum. People can take advantage of everybody at every turn.
So, huh?
No, scuff. Not puff.
Well, you know, there's this whole thing going around about how, oh, you know, the poor are a bunch of freeloaders, that why should my tax dollars have to go and pay for you? It's what's interesting about that is those same people never complain about the subsidies to oil companies, the subsidies to the big banks, the subsidies to the defense industry. Now, you know, if there ever were freeloaders, I would say that's who's freeloading.
Leaving aside the vague generalities, do you have anything specific about Santa Cruz in the last week that's come to your attention?
Well, there's this wonderful talk show known as The Magic Box, which happens at Dollar City. There's a whole series of concerts at Dollar City, not just the thing I was putting a plug in for because it's my talk show. There's Dollar City's over there on Front Street across from the bus station, and keep your eye out for different concerts going on there in the evenings. It's a pretty fun little scene.
If I went to Dollar City, wouldn't they be accusing me of passing the buck?
That deserves to be yawned at. So, we just got a call from Uncle Dennis, who will be doing From the Cream to the Dregs in about 17 minutes, maybe even sooner. He often barges into the studio like a bull in a, China shop, I guess, is the cliche. He does take calls, but he says only fawning calls that allude to his greatness and his wonder. And so if you're going to be calling old Dennis, according to what I've just been told, have the compliments ready and try to be original, try to be creative, try to be credible, and perhaps financial donations are also appreciated. That's from The Cream to the Dregs, coming up after Bathrop Spears Broadsides in 16 minutes and 40 seconds. So there you go. Let's see if we have anything that I might actually pass on before I pass on, so to speak. Apparently Jack Smith has not made it into the studio, and I will be taking that up with him and his press agent Angel later. Jack is a guy who's been arrested repeatedly for allegedly drugs and having a red what do you call it, red tag property that he keeps going back to. His property is out in beautiful Felton, kitty corner from the tiny Felton Library. If you're a Felton person and you know the city of, or I should say the village of Felton, just sort of. So we'll see if he actually shows up. There actually was a press statement made by Chris Worthington, the Berkeley council person, and two other council members after the Tom Bates shutdown debate without allowing council members to talk and without allowing public comment to finish. I will be reviewing that on Sunday, so I guess I'll just leave that aside. What else have I got for the for you before I ramble on? Well, let's see here. One of the problems we have is a terminally slow computer, which makes it difficult to do much in real time. But I don't know if I talked much about Cynthia Matthews. Cynthia Matthews is running for city council. And there's some other rather grotesque figures who are also running for city council. That was in the Santa Cruz Sentinel recently. And I think I have to look at that and see what the story is with that. If I can get the computer to do what it should do, which it's actually a little faster than it has been in years past, so I guess I should be happy or happier, but not fast enough. Well, let's see here. We have, again, I have to wait for the computer, and that is can be a wait indeed. We got a Windows security alert, which I'm going to have to deal with, and I think I am. And the Santa Cruz Sentinel has announced that there are some candidates coming up, which are rather frightening. Well, to me, anyway. Or rather boring. We either get put to sleep or put to sleep in the more profound way. Let's see if I can find an actual reference here. And my apologies for the slowness of my machine. I think that I don't wish to try the patience of the public more than I have already. So I'm going to give you a little musical interlude while I play around trying to find the unfindable. Here is a song from anti-psychiatric singer who is, sweet voice and strong lyrics, and died fairly young. And her voice and her song continues even after she is gone.
Fear, well, it's fear, and it's these halls so barren, where there's no love or caring. Fear rules by design. How else can you control a wandering mind? We've given up on the world you imagine. We've passed you by, and that's why you're afraid. So you pin us down with signs of the mind you fashion. And that's how mental illness is made. This needle is your weapon, and ignorance your force. So many tortures happen concealed behind closed doors. These hospitals are graveyards for victims of your lies, where you parade, oh maniacs, insanity's disguise. You create your use and teach abuse. Someday you will pay your dues to we who've seen the harm you mean and have nothing more to lose. In fighting you, we're fighting fear, and we'll keep right on till psychiatric dominion over public opinion is gone.
Existence.
And that was Morgan Firestar from her privately produced Singing Against Shrinks. More of her next time, probably. I have a kind of a bulletin I got on an email. The Santa Cruz Police Department has replied to a Public Records Act request that it has no policies about enforcement against the use or possession of medical marijuana. The writer says, I found this surprising because I'm certain they hassle disabled homeless people who are medical marijuana users. How can they not have a policy about this? Of course, the answer is they don't have a policy. They simply give their officers free rein to engage in hassling. We had in the studio in the past Craig Canada, who also had a show on Free Radio. He was a homeless guy for quite a number of years. He, almost on principle, because he insisted on using medical marijuana himself and being quite open about it for various ailments he had. He was not allowed shelter at the homeless lack of services shelter. He was discriminated against in housing at different places. And on the streets of Santa Cruz, he gave us interviews indicating that police officers would come up to him and hassle him for medicating. There obviously are policies that they have. At least they did have. I doubt they've changed, but I'd like to get some input. So if anybody out there has friends who've had experiences, or if you yourselves have had experiences about the police and how they deal with the use of medical marijuana in public places, please let me know. Of course, there's the smoking ban laws that criminalize smoke all over town in many respects. Although it's interesting, by that logic, as Becky Johnson has pointed out, another activist who I have a lot of respect for, driving cars should be illegal because their toxic emissions are also covered under the actual literal wording of the smoking ban. We have a caller. Hey there, caller, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Hello? Hey, how's it going, Robert?
You got to turn down your radio, otherwise you will
okay,
not...
Okay, hang on. Yeah, I know it's no, there.
Okay, okay.
Listen, my headphones.
This sounds like Andrea to me.
Yes, it is.
Now, Andrea, sorry, we missed you at the taping of the Colby versus Mayor Lane program the other night. How's it been going with you?
Oh, well, you know, it's going. There's always something going on over here. You know how it is.
So you actually you're in the homeless lack of services center at the moment, but you're in a walker, and you are a person who has been getting names of people and actually who have had concerns about being discriminated against out there, Mayor Lane's whitewasheroony notwithstanding. What's happening out there?
Oh, well, you know, for one thing, one of the latest things is they had to get rid of the couches in here in the poly loft in the hygiene bay because of crabs and scabies, apparently. So that's not very encouraging. Let's see. He has been talking a lot to John, and one of the other latest things that apparently I'm going to find out more through a friend. He's going to look into this, but he heard that Tracy Hegum, you know, lady that runs River Street, apparently within the last 2 months, he said he thinks is that she used her position to get her son into either the River Street shelter or the Paige Smith house.
That's a little favoritism there. So what's the situation for people who are Do you know many disabled folks who are out on the streets, them, you know, and dealing with issues without having any shelter, who want to be in the Homeless Lack of Services shelter or other shelters?
Yeah, there's a couple of them, and you know, some of the ones that are disabled are here, either at River Street or the Loft.
Now you've been the squeaky wheel over there. You've been complaining. You essentially organized. Was able to get Steve Lazow back into the Homeless Lack of Services shelter when he was the Pauley Loft, when he was thrown out because Mia, who tried to do a little caretaking for him, tried to help him shower, and that was considered to be a no-no. But they both got back in, isn't that correct, at some point? And then so did you. But then I heard you were suffering some kind of discrimination there. How, are you getting hassled out there at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or are you doing okay? Have they responded to the spotlight on them in some sense?
Oh, it's fucked up, man. This fucking asshole, false alarm assholes harass us all the time. And you know what really sucks about it, Robert? Oh, my God. They harass out of all the other days of the month, okay? Memorial Day. Everything's closed, and there's no buses running. And these fucking assholes, you know, Steve and I, we were, like, sitting. First, we were sitting on the lot, you know, and they're telling us the lot's closed and that we got to leave. And we're like, you know, we can't even go and get on a bus. So we move next door. We're sitting in front of that guy's business over there, which I don't think he I don't know, he's never said anything to me. And other people sit there, too, because people do medicate there. They just, you know, they stop and rest and kind of hang out there. But everybody's been pretty good about keeping it clean, so I don't think he really minds. They're always telling us, oh, you can't be here, you can't sit here, because, you know, if the guy comes, you know, he'll flip out, you know. He's told us, you know, the merchants or whatever over here, the business owners, you know, have told them that they don't want homeless people hanging around there. So then before Tiffany left, supposedly, according to this false alarm asshole, she said that disabled people can sit inside, like, on the lot. You know, they don't have to leave when they close the lot from 10 to 3. Mm-hmm. But the thing is everybody still doesn't want, the people that need to medicate obviously don't want to sit on the lot because you can't medicate here. So what? They go down the street. Okay, there was an incident a couple weeks ago. The guy that took over Nancy Lou's position after Tiffany left was riding by on his bicycle. This guy, Stan and I, were sitting down there on the corner. Stan wanted to medicate. And, you know, I'm not really much of a big pot smoker anymore, but I do take a little bit more than I have been. But anyway, it was like 1:30 in the afternoon, and we're sitting there, and I was, like, loading my little pipe, and he was, like, hitting his pipe, and Chris comes by on the bike, and he goes, Stan, he pulls up, and he goes, Stan, what are you doing? He goes, you know you're not supposed to be doing that here. You know better than that. And he looks over at me and goes, so do you. He goes, well, we'll talk about this in the morning. Come see me first thing in the morning. And he said, that goes for the both of you. And then he took off. And we were like, what the fuck? So I called John and told John what was going on. And there's this thing called, I don't know if you've heard of the no impact zone.
Yeah,
anyway,
I have heard of that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's some sort of verbal agreement between the shelter over here, I guess, and the police department. And
to remove everybody's rights in a two-block area around the shelter so that it won't alarm the locals. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah,
I got to interrupt you though, because we're already into the next show time. Uncle Dennis, no doubt, will be very happy to hear all this if you fawn enough on him. But anyway, can you?
Not likely.
In other words, my show time is up, Andre. I'm sorry. Conclude it in a sentence or two, if you can.
Anyway, it comes down to it that they Chris tells John, John asked him, do you have enough security? Because the lot security here are also apparently given permission to go off of the lot and patrol around the neighborhood. And John asked Chris, do you have the manpower? This he said, well, no, we don't have the manpower to patrol everywhere. It's something like, you know, so John was referring to, then you shouldn't enforce it at all. I don't know. It's all pretty lame. And I don't know, Steve still medicates where, you know, wherever, sometimes right across the street. And they haven't said nothing, but they said they're going to make a copy of this map of the no-impact zone and hand it out to everybody.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting, Andrea, because I was just talking, I don't know if you've been listening on the radio, but I was just talking about how John Colby, the same John that you're referring to, is advocating for disabled folks out there, asked the police department what their policy is on medical marijuana, and they said they had no policy, but apparently their policy is to ban it around the homeless lack of services center.
Oh, big time.
Or at least to so instruct first alarm people or security guards. I'm not sure who's giving these orders, but this is, if you can pursue this further, find out more about it, and call back on Sunday, we can pick it up there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Hey,
sure.
Thank you for all your work that you're doing out there, and I'll try and be more specific, and we can get into this in some more detail, make it a little clearer to listeners exactly what's going on.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so I'll be listening on Sunday, so.
All right.
Okay, so then we'll talk.